What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. If you're a regular listener, then welcome back. And if you're new around here, then here's a small bit of information about myself. I'm an online health and fitness expert. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation, and I'm a former head of medical and performance in professional football. I've been a health and fitness expert for over a decade, and I've been helping real people feel better, move smarter, and get incredible results. If you are sick of dodgy influencers or people with incredible genetics giving you health advice online, you are in the right place, because every week I help you cut through the confusion of the internet. We discuss relevant topics and we help you get clarity on such topics so that you can make better decisions in your own health and fitness journey. Each week, I'll be joined by expert guests as we dissect trends and we bust myths. This week, we're focusing on sexual health and the important role it plays in shaping our relationship. It's about more than just the physical side. It's also about communication, confidence, and connection. Now, joining me to discuss this further is psychosexual and relationship therapist, Kate Callahan. Kate, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Hi.
Are you
well? I like your headband.
Thank you so much. It's
your dilly boppers, as we call them.
Dilly boppers. It's nice and spooky. We've got some we got some skulls in here and everything. Look at
love
us.
Love it. You've nice. Got all out.
We've got it all. Production and the team have done really well to set out the studio. It's absolutely love it. I love it. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And this is a super important topic because I feel like it's in everyone's lives. Well, I'd like to think most people's lives. So we're going to dive straight into it. What exactly do you mean when you talk about mismatched libidos, and how common is this issue in relationships?
Mm-hmm. So very good question. So mismatched libidos, also known as desire discrepancies, mm-hmm. it's essentially when, and usually in psychosexual and relationship therapy, this is something I see with couples or other relationship structures. So some people are throuples, some people are ethically non-monogamous, which mm-hmm. is where we have multiple partners. We might have one anchor partner, nesting partner, but we have other sexual or emotional partners as well. Okay. But when we talk about it, it's usually where one partner wants sex more than the other, or one partner doesn't really want sex at all or has lost their libido. So it's really common, and it's probably one of the things that I see most of my clients for. Okay. And when I say it's common, I don't mean to minimise the impacts of it, because, mm-hmm. of course, it can be really difficult for a lot of couples and cause a lot of anxiety and stress and have a ripple effect on the rest of the relationship, mm-hmm. which I'll talk a bit more about.
Yeah.
But I can talk a bit about why it is so common. Would
yeah.
that help?
Yeah, go for it. I mean, I've got a whole, selection of questions which we're going to go through. But it's more about letting the conversation flow and so on. So if that's what you want to lead off with, let's go with that.
Yeah, okay, perfect. So the reason it is so common is, one, because, and I kind of want to bust a myth here that most clients come with, and this is where they kind of get stuck, that when we first get together with our partner in the beginning, you want to have sex all the time. Everything's new. Everything's exciting. There's so much to discover. You know, in the honeymoon period, we call it, where you can't really take your hands off each other, and it's a bit obsessive, really.
Yes, I know.
Everything's new, and that drives the cycle of desire, where we're going to get a reward. We're going to get newness. We're going to get growth. But eventually, after a few years, of course, we know what our partner looks like, every part of the body, mm-hmm. what they like sexually. So desire does die down, and it's not as intense as it was in the first place. And there's usually always, in a relationship, a high desire partner and a low desire partner. So the high desire wants it more frequently and more intensely, mm-hmm. and the low desire partner less frequently, less intensely. Okay. And they kind of can get stuck in a cycle where one is feeling rejected and one is feeling pressured.
Okay.
But I'll let you jump in if you've got any questions
Please keep going with this. Obviously, this is, like you said, it's common. Would you say it's more common with men, or would you say it's more common with women? I mean, you know, you might know the answer to this. It might not be anyone at all. It might be like a pretty big 50-50 split, you know. I was with someone who had, you know, low sex drive before, and then my following partner had a high sex drive, and I could keep up with that, but at times I was like, cool, I can't keep up with that, you know.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So it's hard to say whether a specific gender is mostly affected by it. I would say that the myth would be that men often have the higher sex drive, but this is absolutely not true.
Yeah.
There's actually science which dates back to, you know, early man, when we were kind of cave people, that women were actually initially more kind of sexually driven and had higher libidos. But then because of societal changes that, and because, I mean, it's a whole other conversation, but women kind of got shamed for being promiscuous, mm-hmm. because they didn't want them to stray and have multiple partners,
yeah.
because the purpose was having one sexual partner so that you could guarantee your children were your own, so your property and your wealth stayed in the family. But anyway, I won't go off into
yes.
that. But I would say that generally sometimes partners who find connection through intimacy, touch and sex, or particularly anxiously attached people,
yeah.
often have higher sexual desires.
Okay, like, so physical touch, if that's a love language, then, you know, that's something that's super important for them, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how much of libido is influenced by physical health and fitness compared to emotional or psychological factors?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So how much of libido is affected by health or emotional well-being?
Yeah.
So it's definitely impacted equally by both. So what I would do with a couple who have arrived in the room and they've kind of got stuck in a cycle and there's tension and now anxiety around intimacy, which happens, I would usually begin with saying, when did things start to change? When did things start to dip? What did you put it down to? And what did you do about it?
Okay.
And I encourage them to look at, did somebody get unwell, be that depression,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, somebody's status in health changed so that they weren't as physically able to do things, or, you know, we know that as well, certain conditions such as diabetes and certain medications can impact sexual functioning, so they yeah. can affect erections.
Okay.
And also menopause impacts libido as well. Some antidepressants affect libido, some contraceptives as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd look at, was there any changes in that? And then we'd see what we can do as practical steps, because
yeah.
there is usually always a solution or something we can do if it is a medical change or a physiological issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then emotionally, has somebody started to change the job where they're working 12-hour days Monday to Friday,
okay.
and then coming home late and there is no space to connect? Or have you had children and they've wedged in between the quality time together and emotional connection?
Yeah.
So there's just lots of different things which can affect it equally with emotional and physiologically.
Mm.
I would say, going back to your original question around which impacts it more, it's really kind of hard to say which has most of an impact, but all these factors can impact it. So I encourage couples to look at what changed.
Yeah.
And rather than it being down to the relationship and them disconnecting themselves or falling out of love.
Yeah, I mean,
does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, you know, there isn't always going to be an answer, a straight answer to absolutely everything, right? I know for a fact from experience and working with men and women of all ages, probably more 25 and above, that physical health and fitness plays a huge part in their sexual desire or their actual libido in itself. From experience myself, I know that when I got bigger, I was My sex drive was non-existent, didn't want anything, didn't want anyone, you know, and then I know that as well, not with clients or anything other than that. It's more that it's conversations that have been had, you know, when you start off with, you know, with a coaching journey. It's like, you know, why are you doing this? Well, I don't feel this, I don't feel that. Me and my partner aren't working very well because I don't feel myself, or I'm not myself, or I've lost myself. So I do feel that, you know, you're the expert in this area, not me, but I know for a fact that physical health and appearance plays a huge part in it, because, you know, we all have eyes. Well, most of us do. Most of them work as well. So, you know, I find that sometimes just seeing someone, you know, in your brain, you get a chemical released and you feel good, or you know, there's so many things to it. But, you know, that's just touching on the surface, isn't it? I mean, you've brushed upon it very briefly at the end there about how change of lifestyle, or maybe change of job, but can stress, lifestyle, or even overtraining affect sexual desire? And if so, how can people find that balance? You know, do you have to put it in the diary? Do we have to say it's Wednesday, it's hump day, let's get some humping in?
You know what? I listened to something the other day and I absolutely loved it. It was talking about scheduled sex, and in long-term relationships, you often say, right, Friday night, kind of get ready, we're gonna have sex. That's when we're gonna have sex this month or this week or whatever. And somebody said, we used to have scheduled sex all the time when we were dating, because you'd know you were seeing that person on Tuesday or Thursday night, and you know that you'd need to sort of kind of get aroused and be horny. Yeah. So it was always based on a schedule. But of course, back then you do have a sort of much more intense desire for one another, but it's still scheduled. But in answer to your question, I think lifestyle changes, health, it's massively important, because we have to feel good in ourselves. We have to feel desirable. And then we also give off that energy where we feel like we're desirable, where then we are desired, if that makes sense, that confidence in yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you're not in very good health, you're kind of not able to train, you're not able to go to the gym or eat healthy like you would usually do if that's one of your core values, then it means you're not feeling as good in yourself. And sex is very exposing. Intimacy is exposing, often without clothes. And you can see your body. So if you're distracted and in your head, it can interrupt the arousal circuit and also make you think, actually, I don't want to be naked in front of my partner, or I'm not connecting with this because I'm in my head about my body.
Yeah.
But another thing is with fitness, if you are on taking any steroidal medications or anything to get bigger in the gym, we know this impacts testosterone.
Yeah.
And we know for men that testosterone is a massive driver for a sexual desire. And there's a lot of people who are impacted by that, where they've taken steroids even early in their life, and then later in life their testosterone levels are much lower than what would be expected at that age, and they're not getting sexually aroused or even having erectile issues as well.
Right, something that I know is super important, having learnt this through, you know, doing something in my previous life, communication. What role does communication play in maintaining intimacy when libidos don't align? How important is that? Because I'm sure I've heard situations of men where they just grunt and they point and they make noises and they go, is this going to happen? Like, surely you should know your partner, and that sometimes communication is the best thing for every relationship out there.
Yes. Huge question. Just taking a minute to think about where to even begin with this. Ultimately, 100%, it's so important. If you don't have solid communication, you don't feel understood. You don't feel able to take emotional risk and be vulnerable with your partner, and it's going to be met constructively and you're going to be able to work through it. Mm-hmm. And there's also going to be a lot of what we call in couples work, unresolved arguments, which we call unfinished business.
Not letting go of
which
things.
Builds resentment And the biggest thing that resentment destroys is intimacy.
Really?
Because you need trust for intimacy.
No wonder I never had sex with one of my ex-partners. She always used to hold on to things. Oh, I've just held on to that, haven't I?
It's the biggest kind of blocker in the bedroom. But also, communication's huge, because usually if there is a partner who doesn't really want to have sex, they're withholding something from their partner that they want. So there's actually a power element in it. And I'm not saying this is the case with all couples. But what are they holding on to? Why are they holding on to this power element? And is it because they feel unsafe or overwhelmed or out of control in other aspects of the relationship that need to be addressed and talked through? And then maybe they'll feel more comfortable to let go of this power.
Yeah.
But in terms of communication, a huge thing is to be able to contract that. So what happens is when communication breaks down, so this is a huge thing that I want everyone to kind of take away from this conversation, is that usually, this is typical, couples, when there's libido discrepancies and mismatched desire, rather than talking about it, nobody initiates for risk of being rejected or someone feeling pressure or having to reject.
Yeah.
So they stop engaging in physical touch, playfulness, kissing, cuddling, flirting, anything like that, in case it's a risk of being perceived as an invite for sex.
But also, do you think it also stems back to maybe the whole argument of consent, right? Consent. So on Married at First Sight recently, this year, there's a participant called Grace. I've met Grace. I've met Ashley. Both amazing people. Got a lot of time for them. Now, Grace actually said on the show how if she wants to withdraw consent mid-sex, she can, which you can, right? We can withdraw from sex whenever we want. But do you think that this individual in this relationship who has tried physical touch, who's tried all these things, tried peacocking, whatever terms you want to use to initiate sex, because they've been rejected, that might then also be a thing at the back of their mind? Or I could put it on my partner here. I could, you know, be a little bit more physical or whatever, because I know that they like that. But then they might consensually say, no, I don't want this, which happens, right? So do you think that's a big thing to play with it as well?
Yeah, so I think, are you asking if it's okay to kind of still initiate physical touch and play and for your partner to engage back in that, but sex not to be expected?
Well, is that what you're asking? Yeah, basically, because obviously the whole part of sex is so much to it, right? It's not just penetration. It's like the whole intimacy kind of chart, or whatever you want to call it. So I'm just trying to obviously think of a good question for you, but it's more like, you know, if your partner says no, or, you know, takes away, you know, consent for actual penetrative sex, but then you know, are you then able to be like, again, I don't know, are you then able to be like, oh, you know, is foreplay off the cards or something like that? Because it's like, intimacy is also about being playful, right? It's not just about wham, bam, thank you, man. I know a lot of men think sex is just in, out, I'm done, see you later. But there's so much more to sex, right? And the whole intimacy kind of experience.
100%. So in couples work, we kind of say foreplay, which is the, you know, the cuddling, the kissing, eye gazing, you know, the helping with the chores, or like the touching my back while I'm cooking, you know, spontaneous cuddles. And then obviously you've got what we commonly know as foreplay.
Yeah.
And then you have actual penetrative sex. So it's a really, really good question, because the way I would work with couples, and this is something that's resonating with you, communicate and contract with your partner. Can we just say that sex for the next month or something is completely off the cards, penetrative sex I'm talking about, and even foreplay if you want to say, so anything sexual and touching of the genitals is off the cards for a month. And let's just reconnect small steps
a tough month.
with kissing again, cuddling, flirting, spontaneous play rather than actual sex. And some people find just having the pressure off and that contracted framework would just go into operate within this makes a huge difference, and they actually start to reconnect again just with intimacy and play.
Okay, nice. Right, Kate, we've only got time for one more question. We're short on time, sadly. This has been a great chat. Finally, what's one piece of advice you'd give to couples struggling with mismatched libidos or maybe intimacy anxiety to help them feel more connected and supported? Just one nugget of information that someone who is listening can take away.
Okay, great question. Name it. Name the elephant in the room.
Okay.
And get curious. Not you keep rejecting me, but what's happening? Let's sit and work together as a team. We've not been having sex. What's going on for you? This is what's going on for me. And get really curious and be compassionate to your partner, not judging, and certainly don't ever demand sex, because that's your surefire way not to get it.
Perfect. Kate, you've been a star. Thank you so much. Right, before we wrap this up, where can people find you online? Do you have a website, social media? Where can people get in contact with you?
Yeah, thank you. So I'm on Instagram. It's KAYTE Does Therapy. And on my Instagram is a link to my private practice, holding the space. And I can also maybe send it to you so you can put it in the bio of the episode.
We'll get a team to do that for you.
Whatever. But yeah, I'm on Instagram, and that's a good way to find me.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be speaking with sex coach Amari Lee.
FUBAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
You might then see friends, family that require a little bit of support, financial advice. How do you go about sharing that advice, sharing that support without being condescending?
A practical tip that everyone can do that is low friction: send them financial content that you like. If you have a favorite content creator, if you see an article that you like, send them the video and just ask them, what do you think? And then that can begin a conversation around it.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled. And it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When is too early to say I love you? Soph said it the night we met.
Yeah. I did. Right, okay, right, let's just clear this up, right? When I said I love you, I remember I said it in the car.
In the cab, yeah.
In the cab, and I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, well, that was the day I made you my girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I said, I love you. And you were like, I love you too. And I was like, I love you so much. Oh my God, I love you.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
We store so much of our trauma and our energy in our body. I am just incredibly, incredibly tired of keeping this trauma locked inside my body. And so all I needed to do is release it. You know, it's like going on a bender and drinking too much booze and you throw it up because you just need to get that out of your system because it's gonna catch up with you at some point if you don't.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more with George. This is What The Health.
This is What The Health on Fubar Radio with me, George Bertineau. Joining me now to continue our conversation about building confidence in the bedroom and how to improve your sex life is sex coach Amari Lee. Amara, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Great topic to have today.
Excellent topic. So juicy, so needed. And yeah, in listeners in for a treat.
Yeah, exactly. All the puns we needed as well. Right. Let's jump straight into it. So when people talk about having a healthy sex life, what does that actually mean? And how does it look different for everyone?
Yeah, so there's kind of no normal when it comes to sex, sexual health, sex life and things like that. So having a healthy sex life just means feeling satisfied, connected and feeling safe, whether that's with yourself or a partner. So that can look different to different people. Mm-hmm. And to some people, a healthy sex life might be having sex like once a month, but that satisfies them. It might not be having sex sort of at all, or it might not even be penetrative sex. It could just be oral or kink stuff or things like that. So yeah, it's definitely different to individual people, but I think overall feeling satisfied and safe, I would say, is the main goal that we want.
Obviously on the last conversation we were talking about, you know, how some people have, you know, don't have sex for months and so on. So I think obviously, you know, like you said, there are different ends of the spectrum. So how can someone start to understand their own sexual kind of needs and desires, especially if they've never really explored anything before?
Such a great question. So I think it's really important to start off with like curiosity rather than judgment. So a lot of people who may have never explored their sexuality until mid-20s, mid-30s, mid-40s, there's normally some kind of shame around it, or purity culture, or something that isn't, that has been preventing them from doing so. So I think to be really kind to yourself and to start off with curiosity. So that can be from educating yourself, from going to workshops and talks, looking online. We have a new brand of influencers called Sexfluencers. So you can go onto Instagram and TikTok and really just sort of like see how things feel in your body. You don't even need to jump to, okay, I need to go and have sex with as many people as possible, or I need to go and like finger myself ASAP. Like you don't even need to start off with the touching of yourself. I think some things it could be you're watching a film and something happens and you're like, oh,
you're feeling a different
way. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, okay.
So starting off with things like that, like journaling, there's something called body mapping where you can... So people do it in different ways, but essentially it's touching your body sort of like all over in different ways and feeling what feels good. So
Different sensations.
You can do that with like just your fingers and just like literally trace different parts of your body and see what kind of like tickles something. So yeah, you don't necessarily have to start with a partner. I would actually recommend starting with yourself. Educate yourself. There's a whole world of sex out there. I'm still learning. There is so much I'm learning every single day that I'm like, wow.
I have no doubt. I keep hearing new words all the time as well. So DIY, but it doesn't necessarily have to be masturbation or anything like that.
Yeah, no, because that can be a really big step for some people. So really big step.
Okay. Right. Porn.
Yes.
Do you think porn has ruined a lot of people's perceptions of sex and intimacy? Or do you maybe feel, you know, like on the last question, it's helped people maybe understand a little bit more?
Such a good question. So all in all, yes, definitely. I think, you know, children as young as like 7 or 8 now are seeing porn, and there's no way that that doesn't have an effect on a growing mind. But I also think like porn isn't this evil thing that we all need to be really scared of. I think porn can teach in some ways, like learning new techniques or seeing different positions and like fantasy and things like that. So I think there's definitely a space for porn. But I think we need to have that like porn literacy of understanding this isn't real, this is fake, which I think is a really hard thing to grasp. It's like watching, I saw a tweet where it said, it's like watching Fast and Furious and being like, this is how I'm going to learn how to drive.
Well, it is Fast and Furious,
and it's
right?
like, and it's like, we can associate it like that's fake, but I think it is hard because even, like being in my mid 20s and someone who's had sex before, sometimes I would look at porn and be like, but how is it fake? I don't get it. I can see that on the screen doing this. Yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah.
And I really had to unlearn that, like, oh no, like this is, it's like watching a romance movie. This is how, like, it's fake. It's not real. There is a lot of more like real life porn that's kind of coming out where they show behind the scenes and things like that. So I think that's great. It definitely has its place, but we just have to have that education behind it to understand.
Well, I was going to say, like, maybe there could be a space in the porn industry where it's more, they do like a more educational side of things.
Yes. Yeah. So because there are things out there. Joy Club, I work with Joy Club, so it's a bit of a shout out. But they show behind the scenes, like, sex education, and actually show porn, but like how to have a threesome, how to communicate, how to do anal, how to communicate. So that's like really, like, I do think we need
insightful.
Graphic sex ed, because like for adults anyway, where, you know, you can see like, okay, like how does everything work? What is the communication behind it? And things like that. So there's definitely room.
Okay. I mean, quickly in front of me, I've got an email that came through, and it was about UK research has revealed that porn has officially replaced parents in schools as the main way young people learn about sex. The study sample is small, 5,300 people aged between 18 and 29. 65% people say porn was the first time they ever saw sex. 45 say it became their main source of sex education. 52% of men say porn has damaged their self-esteem. 85% say it's contributed to anxiety or depression, and 1 in 3 say reduce their interest in sex life.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, again, it's a sample size. We don't even know anything about the cohort. For all we know, these might have been people that have never seen porn, or they might have watched it every day, multiple times. We don't know the extent of the research, but it's figures, right? It's numbers, and it gives us an indication of something, right? Are there any common myths or misconceptions about what good sex should look like?
Yeah, so I think, again, this comes from porn and even not even, like, TV shows, movies, you know, they're getting raunchier and raunchier, where people think sex is just spontaneous and it's just going to happen. And one thing I always say is, like, sex is a skill. It's not, okay, granted, some people might be better at it than others, fine. But I do believe that sex is a skill, and it's something that you need to, like, learn and work on. Yeah. And I think, especially for a lot of young people who are having sex and they might have watched quite a bit of porn beforehand, and then all of a sudden they're having sex and they're like, oh, This isn't what I thought it was going to be. This isn't what it looks like.
Why is she not doing what she did in the movie? Or why is he not doing...
I think also seeing real life bodies as well. Not that, obviously, people that do porn are real life people, but, you know, they're kind of...
They're all shapes and sizes, but there are less... I would say there is less variety of shape and size. There are more particular kind of builds and sizes.
Absolutely. So, yeah, and I think that kind of... idea, people then get confused and kind of think, is this it? Is that all the sex I'm going to be having? And I'm like, it's a skill. You need to work on it. Like, you're going to be constantly working on it. There's so many new things to learn.
Well, it's like health and fitness, right? When the first time you go to the gym,
exactly,
are you going to be good?
No,
of course
definitely
not. And even with the information on the machine that tells you what to do, like porn or like the education that you've learned, in the back of your mind, you think you know what you're doing. But until you've done it lots or more than,
and you start speaking to people as well, personal trainers, all of that, and you're like, oh wait, I should do, like, have my arms like this or like that.
Yeah, my arms, or I can do two ways. There's multiple ways, right? Like with sex, there's more ways to skin a cat. So, for couples who have been together for a while, what are some realistic ways to keep intimacy and excitement alive?
Brilliant question. So I think this is spoken about beforehand, but, like, scheduling sex can be really hot. Like, the anticipation is, like, kind of foreplay enough sometimes. I think it's really quite a horny thing to do, if that makes sense. And then other thing would be, so I do have a bag of sex toys.
Yeah, well,
so
we're going to get onto that in a second. Or now, enter the sex toys.
We can talk about it now. We can talk about it in a bit.
Yeah, what does that say on your bag?
Yeah, it's a cat riding...
Speaking of skinning cats,
Bag. Oh, no, it might be a dog. It's a dog or a cat riding on a skateboard.
It's got a funny
Little sex toy bag.
Right.
Also for couples, there's loads of, like, yes, no, and maybe sex checklists on the internet. So if you type that in, so yes, no, maybe, sex checklist. And basically what it is there'll be like 100 things, 90 things, 50 things that couples or individuals can try. And it will start from like really simple things like, I don't know, like rub a feather along your body to more like extreme
sensation and so on. Or do you want to be,
and then goes on to like more extreme stuff with like more like kink and BDSM stuff. But it's like a checklist that you can try. The biggest one I've seen was 400 different things you could try.
Oh, wow. So it's really like you can go from one extremity to another. So you could go from feather touching to a paddle to... God knows, being kicked in the nuts.
Yeah, if that's what you want, do it safely. Learn how to do it safely. Yeah. But
put shin pads on and everything, and you're great.
Yeah, so many different things. So that's one thing as well.
Okay, great. I mean, you've got the sex toys up on the desk. I will let you enter the room with the sex toys.
Okay, so it's not often I leave the house. When I do leave the house, I leave with a bag of sex toys.
Well,
so.
Each their own. I'm not judging you for it.
So we have the classic, this is like a rabbit vibrator.
The infamous rabbit.
Yeah, which has kind of, I feel like, been the one that's been most popular over the years and it's got the most like screen time and things like that. So there's, rabbit ears over at the top and then it's like an insertable wand, I guess, that goes like inside of you. So these are for vaginas and the rabbit ears like...
clitoral stimulation.
Clitoral stimulation, thank you very much. No worries. This one vibrates. You can get ones that go... You're very proud of yourself. You can get ones that kind of go in and out. So they do like a thrusting, pumping motion. Loads of different variations of these. I got that one.
Right.
And then this is another one for vulvas and vaginas. This is the
I've seen a review on this and it was a viral review where it was like, I entered another dimension from how good... It's a clit sucker, right?
Yeah, so clit stimulation. So this actually... This went viral on TikTok, I think during 2020.
Maybe, yes.
And everyone was going on and on about it. And I remember like a couple of years later, I was like, right, let's see what all the hype is about.
Yeah.
It's great. 10 out of 10 recommend. So yeah, the clit would just go there, you turn it on and it makes a suction-y sensation. So it's great. And then we have sex toys for penises as well because no one talks about it.
No, they don't.
We don't talk about it. So we have this.
Okay.
Okay, so the penis would go inside this section here.
Yeah.
And it vibrates here. So this, if I know how to turn it on, will be up against the frenulum. And the frenulum is... Where there's like the head of the penis.
Would it be the banjo string that is?
Yeah, so where if you were circumcised, that section there is the frenulum, as best I can describe it. And it vibrates up against it. And it's also remote controlled.
I can hear that through the headphones as well. That's that's like ASMR,
it's
by the way.
It's quite intense,
I'm
going to
close my eyes. 1 second. Oh, it stopped.
But yeah,
but I get what you mean.
So yeah, that could be quite sensitive for a lot of people, but depending on who you are.
Okay.
And then I've got one more one for penis people.
Okay.
Ta-da! So this one, your balls would go through here, sit through there, and then the penis goes through here.
And then that goes in
and
there.
And then this at the top, you click it and it vibrates.
The two ladies' toys, you can... do solo and with a partner or a group, I'm assuming. Yep. And then I guess these two are more solo.
You can use all of these things for anything, honestly. Yeah. I think a lot of people think you kind of have to use toys like in a partner when that's not true. You can use it whenever you want. It's such a great way to like explore different sensations,
do something different,
and
you
things
know,
like that.
Please your partner via something else. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are everything in my goodie bag today. I've got some lube as well.
Great.
Which is, this is water.
Serves a purpose.
Somehow. Yeah, very, very important. So yeah, that's what I carried with me on the train today.
Great. that is a great little selection. So thanks so much for bringing that in. So next part. We've spoken about, obviously, couple intimacy. Mm. What about solo intimacy or self-exploration? You mentioned feathers. You know, you mentioned physical touch on yourself. Mm. You know, can self-exploration play a role in improving connection and confidence with a partner?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you know what you want, then... One, that takes pressure off your partner. Like, one thing I always say, your pleasure is, like... it's yours, and that's something, you know, if you can take the pressure off your partner and then they're giving you the pleasure that they know that you want and you're happy, then that's gonna not only help your confidence but their confidence as well, because I think, again, sex is a skill and you need to communicate and everyone's different. So I think if they're just kind of fumbling around, doing what they think is good, and then it's not actually, but you're just like, okay, this is fine, I'm not going to say anything.
Well, you're the director, right? You're in the director's chair.
Great analogy,
the most important thing is if you guide, point, and vocalise, then you can still go wrong.
Yeah, of course, but that's the fun. Like, that's kind of the fun in it.
You're
it's like
more
play.
Guided, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that goes across, like, all genders as well. I know, you know, like, you're not expected to know everything. There's still so much learning. And, like, each person is different as well. Like, what might be great for someone else? The other person's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing that? Who told you to do that?
Stay away from my ass, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
People get obsessed. I went on national TV and said I liked being rimmed and... I was okay with it.
Amazing, good.
I'm
as you should be.
Bloke. It's fine.
As you should be. And also, again, butt stuff is so like taboo in every sense. And it's like, oh, do you know how many people like butt stuff? It's actually
more people than
more people
to
than
admit.
You realise. Yeah,
but again,
definitely.
I think it's because a lot of people aren't that confident, so they're quite shy in the bedroom, or when they get comfortable with someone, or maybe when they get confident. You know, it's probably been a conversation with women and partners before I've even got into the bedroom with them sometimes because it's the topic of conversation.
Talking about sex before you have sex, I think it needs to be done. Also, like, it's such good foreplay to be like, okay, so what are you into? What do you like? What don't
you
like?
And
it's like that pressure just like almost builds up. Like, that in itself is foreplay. And I think, like,
I totally agree.
I think everyone should be doing that. Even if it's like a 5-minute conversation of like, okay, don't do this, do this. I love that.
Yeah.
I think it'll just make so much difference. And I think people need to be open to feedback as well. I think a lot of people get like insecure and they're like, oh, how am I not doing this right? Or embarrassed.
Well, I've been on dates before, you know, might not be a first date conversation, might be a second or a third, or depending on how you're flowing with the individual. But I've had people that have been like, I don't, you know, or even before I've met them, being like, I'm not comfortable talking about this. That's fine. You're not going to like me. I'm like I'm like smutty William Shakespeare.
Absolutely.
It rolls off the tongue. It is in every innuendo possible. I am very, very vocal about things. And if you don't want to talk about it, I'm not, you know, dismissing this, but it also, this isn't going to work.
It's not going to
work.
Because
you don't like that side of me, and that's a big part of me. Like I said, smutty William Shakespeare.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. Communication is, like, I know people say it all the time, but communication really is the number one thing.
Number one.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Right. Mm. We are going to be short on time, so I've got a couple more questions for you. How important is lube when it comes to sex with yourself, your partner, or toys?
So I would say very important. I know some people, I have friends who are like, I hate lube, I never use it, I'm wet enough. I'm like, great, good for you. Can't relate.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, there's so many, I think at school I learned about lube and it was when you go through menopause, your vagina's going to shrivel up and you're going to need lube.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the extent to it. Whereas now, like, lube just makes things so much easier and there's so many people out there who need it. Mm-hmm. And it's not an indication of how turned on you are, how not turned off you are. Like, there's so many different reasons. I've got PCOS, which one of the symptoms is having a dry vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. So it's, it's, you know, I think it's really important. I think everyone should try it. It just helps elongate the process.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Great advice. When it comes to sex toys, how does someone know which one is right for them? Because it's not like you can try before you buy in the shop. Really.
No, I wouldn't recommend doing that. No, you will get kicked out. Such a good question.
Can I try this one,
please? Yeah, no returns. So I think you need to focus on what sensations feel right for you. So I think a lot of people automatically go for like a big kind of like wand vibrator, but that might be too much.
Too big, too fast,
some people,
whatever.
Yeah, some people might go for like a mini bullet,
yeah,
but they might not like the sensation directly on the clit of vibrations.
Yeah.
So honestly, you do have to kind of like think of what you like and then kind of just try things out. Like, you might not like the first one you buy. It's an investment.
Yeah,
it's an investment.
And it's not like you could go and ask your friends. Yeah, your friend might have an experience with a particular clit sucker.
They might love it.
But then you might get to it and it might be like, that's way too intense for me.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's trial and error, but it's fun.
Okay, great. I mean, sex is meant to be fun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, last question, okay? For the listeners who are hesitant to invest time or effort into improving their sex life, what would you say to encourage them to take the first step?
I would say that's like, sex is a huge part of like your health, your well-being, your confidence. I think you need to view it like going to the doctors almost, where mm-hmm. it's like, it can really change your life, your perspective on life, your confidence. Yeah. So I'll just say, if you're thinking about it, just take the step. Like, because it's on your mind, it's something you think about, just take the step. Yeah, that's, I know it's not the most profound advice, but I'm like, just hashtag just do it.
Just do it. Just go for it. Take a foot in front of the other. Yeah. Right. Amari, thank you so much for your time. Very good. We've got something planned afterwards as well, which I'm super excited about. Where can people find you online? Do you have a website, Instagram, TikTok?
I do. So my website is www.sexcoachingbyamari.com and my TikTok and Instagram is sxcoachingbyamari. And I also run another business called Admin by Amari Agency, which is a sex positive virtual assistant agency.
Great. So, we love to hear it. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming into the studio and I will speak to you soon.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Thank you. Bye bye bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be answering some listener questions.
FUBAR Radio. Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness and I need him to be kind.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
If you drink a little, then drive, you risk losing your license. You risk every day becoming more complicated.
How am I supposed to get to training, Dad? How am I supposed to...
You risk losing your job.
I'm going to have to let you go.
You risk your family not looking at you the same way.
I can't believe you did that.
You risk injuring someone.
Hello, I need an ambulance.
You risk being seen as a drink driver. Drink a little, risk a lot. Think.
Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more!
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this. Yeah. You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
What the hell? With Georges Bertineau. Exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Now it's time to answer some of your fitness and health questions. If you want to get involved, you can DM us at What the Health Show on Instagram, or you can DM me personally at Georges Bert. That is GeorgesBert. And we will make sure the questions get put on the show. Right. First of all, what are your thoughts on OMAD, OMAD, which is one meal a day diet? Right. Interesting. So I'm not a big fan, and I'm going to tell you why. That's what I'm here to do. So, The reason why I'm not a big fan of one meal a day is because I don't think anyone actually benefits from it. We have to stop looking at food as bad for us, okay? A lot of us, we're in a very, very toxic world right now where social media influencers and people with six packs and big bottoms and fake breasts and all of these enhancements and incredible genetics are telling you what to do with your body. I am none of those things, first of all, but I am qualified. I do have a degree and I have coached many, many people. One meal a day, unless you are on very low calories, and when I say low calories, I mean like 14, 15, 1600, I wouldn't really recommend it. Why? Because when we get really hungry, we're more likely to eat crap. And when I say crap, I don't mean few crisps, a bit of chocky. I mean, a whole 200 gram bar of chocolate. I mean, a whole family share size bag of Maltesers. You can, you know, you just get carried away when you're really bloody hungry. That's the issue. So if having one meal a day you think suits your lifestyle, great, but pitch it to me or go and ask a medical professional or a health and fitness expert, because the reality is one meal a day isn't going to change anything. Normally, most of my clients, when they start with me, aren't eating enough food. I have a lady who's worked with me for over a year, 7 years of not changing weight. She was eating like 700-800 calories. That's a massive calorie deficit, isn't it, people? But it's not, because her body's not working. It's not doing what it needs to do. So bumped her on loads more food. I think she's on about 16, 17, 1800 calories. All of a sudden, her body starts working. That's kind of how reverse dieting works. But anyway, so long and short, my thoughts are no, don't do it. It's not really worth it. You're better to have two meals. Why is one meal your target or focus? Ask yourself that. And do you want to be really bloody hungry? Next question. I've seen a lot of people online booking into cryo chambers. What is it, and what does it actually help your performance? Does it help your performance? Not overly, but it does aid your recovery. And obviously, recovery is then going to have a long-term effect on your performance. If you're fresher, you perform better. If you are fresher, you feel better. And if you're fresher, well, you're more likely to try things because your body doesn't hurt. So what are they, first of all? They are like negative, I don't know how many degrees, but they are negative degree like ice chambers. So it's like cold water immersion. We use cold to suppress and help with recovery. We use heat to heal, encourage blood flow, and make growth occur. So the cryo chambers, great use of equipment for recovery, for freshness. Do they help with performance? I said no. Technically, no, they don't. But they help with freshness and making you feel better for your sporting event, if that's what you're doing them for. So yeah, they're good. Hopefully that helps. Next, do you think there are any benefits to? What are some quick healthy meals for people who hate cooking? Right. To anyone who is listening to this right now, you can message me the word meal prep and I will send you meal prep recipe ideas. I have loads of recipes that I give to all my clients. They have access to them. I've actually just made 6 videos for individual meal preps that are super easy, super quick, and they give you 5-6 portions depending on how big you want the meal size, but they're all 500 calories. I think a 500 to 600 to 700 calorie meal is great, because 500 calories, 3 of them a day, 1500. Most people shouldn't be on anything lower than 1500 unless you're extremely small, petite and tiny, and then you can build the rest of your meals around that. So some quick healthy meals for people who hate cooking. That is my suggestion. If not, microwavable rice, an air fryer, and you can put the meat of your choice, chicken thigh. Yeah, that's great. And frozen veg. So you're going to put your rice in the microwave. You're going to put your chicken in the air fryer. And then you're going to pan fry some frozen vegetables. Take you 18, 20 minutes. Done. Easy. Super quick. You can buy microwavable meals, you can buy stuff online, but I wouldn't overly recommend it. Meal prep companies are fantastic if you've got the budget for you, but super, super expensive, super overpriced, and they've got to make their money somewhere. Right, guys, that's it. Massive, massive thank you to Amari and Katie, who have joined us today. You guys have been incredible, a great sex-positive chat, and that's what we like. A massive thank you to you guys for joining us today on What the Health. A reminder that you guys can download the app and listen each week, and you can follow us on social media. We are at What the Health Show on Instagram. Also, if you are struggling with your health and fitness journey, or you want some help with your health and fitness goals, I provide a top-tier coaching service. There's no BS. It is problem-solving, it is hand-holding, and you can get in contact with me at Georges Burt on Instagram. It's just a massive thank you from me. I'll be back next week at 11 a.m. for another jam-packed show. I'm Georges. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Sex positive. Love you. Bye.
FUPAR Radio.